Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. The race clock time of 4:09 during the first explosion at the 2013 Boston Marathon bombings was awakening, a hey you moment for runner David Hamill, training for his next marathon. Seconds later, a second bomb exploded, killing an 8-year-old boy. With the smoke and chaos reminiscent of the Oklahoma City bombing at 9:02 a.m. in 1995, this event reignited long dormant reactions and emotions that didn't go away when the second airplane crashed into the World Trade Center during the 9/11 attack at a similar time several years later. Thus began a passionate journey to reclaim the Boston and Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon finish lines in 2014 and 2016. 4:09 to 9:02, Boston to Oklahoma and New York City's Beyond the Bombings by David Hamill is a story of an Air Force sergeant and his wife, of teddy bears and babies that weren't to be, and of letting go. David is a retired U.S. Air Force Chief Master Sergeant serving over 30 years on active duty in aircraft maintenance and as director of an Air Force Enlisted Heritage Research Institute in Montgomery, Alabama. Is currently owner-operator of Military Support Services. He's been completed, by the way, in over 31 years of marathon running, 26.2-mile distances. He has finished 131 marathons and has completed one in 50 states, including two Boston Marathon finishes. He cross-trains playing aggressive hockey, a motivational speaker on fitness and self-preservation, and Air Force history and heritage. He's originally from Springfield, Massachusetts, currently resides in Spring Lake, North Carolina, with his wife, Gloria, of 30 years. David Hamill, author of 4:09 to 9:02, Boston to Oklahoma and New York City's Beyond the Bombings, is our guest on This Week in America. David, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Good morning. Glad to be on, Rick. Good to hear from you.
It is such a moving book that you've written, such a powerful book, 4:09 to 9:02. What inspired you to write this story?
Sometimes there's jolts and redirects in life that happen, and the explosions in Boston really set off a chain of events. And one thing led to the other, bringing me back in time and reigniting old emotions that I thought were put behind. But apparently that was not the case. Thus begins a journey.
Boy, and what a journey it's been, and it's all documented in David's book, 4:09 to 9:02, Boston to Oklahoma and New York City's Beyond the Bombings. I mentioned teddy bears. How did teddy bears become the catalyst for your story?
Once I went back to complete the Boston Marathon in 2014 after the bombings and that whole scenario there, I got back home and there was a little teddy bear that was sitting on a shelf kind of giving me these vibes. And it reminded me I wasn't quite done after Boston. And the teddy bears brought me back to Oklahoma City in 1995 when that bombing happened in April of that year. 168 people were killed, 21 of 25 babies in the daycare center perished, and my wife and I happened to be there in the area for fertility treatments at the time. But the teddy bear became a catalyst of all that, teddy bears hanging on the fences, and it became a symbol of comfort and letting go. So that teddy bear on the shelf said, you know, you're not done yet. You have to go back to Oklahoma City and put these feelings to rest. That's part two after Boston.
Yes. Talk about this emotional journey that you and your wife went through. How difficult was this? Explain what this was like for you, what it has been like for you, and maybe to an extent is still like for you.
Yeah, my wife and I were only married about a year. We were stationed in Oklahoma at Altus Air Force Base. We had fertility issues. We went to Oklahoma City for in vitro IVF treatments, which is the center was just a few blocks from the the bombing sites. Ironically, we stopped and parked near the area where Timothy McVeigh had put his bomb truck there to pick up a T-shirt for my mom at the YMCA because she worked at the YMCA back in Springfield, Massachusetts, and we thought, well, she's going to be a mother someday, and we'll get the T-shirt. But we got back and heard about the bombings as soon as we got home, and it was how did we miss this? We were so lucky. But we were in our second series of IVF. We were unsuccessful. on our first go around. So when the bomb kicked off and these babies were killed, and here we are trying to have a baby, it was and nothing seemed to go well during that time. We had to continue to go back for follow-on treatments, but the recovery operations were still obviously going on day 6, day 11, and we were unsuccessful a second time. So that was probably the emotional part at 9:02 that set the feelings that I had for many years. It took the Boston Marathon bombings at 4:09 to begin that journey.
Well, let's talk about that. Before we do, if you're just joining us, David Hamill is our guest on the program. That's H-A-M-E-L. The book is called 409 to 902, Boston to Oklahoma and New York Cities Beyond the Bombings. You'll find the book available. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pageturner.us in their bookstore. Link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, that will take you directly to information on David's book, and you can order it there as well. Let's talk about the historical significance of Boston and how that became a factor in your story.
Well, Boston is being what it is, history. The Boston Marathon is always on Patriot Day. First shots at Lexington and Concord, kicking off the American Revolution. So all that history there, and bombings happened. It was like a real shot at our American spirit with terrorism, that kind of stuff. And I'm, of course, obviously being from Massachusetts, that's home stuff there. I really wanted to go back and see if we can take this back. And so that began the journey to the 2014 marathon. Of course, the Red Sox had won that year, and all these things were kicking in, adding to the spirit. What quite a time that was.
How emotional was that, the crossing the finish line 2014 at the Boston Marathon with all that you've been through, all that you have seen? How emotional was that for you?
Oh, it's just an incredible journey, knowing that we had got the marathon back. McVeigh was captured. I'm not McVeigh, but the Sonia brothers, the whole story there. When I crossed the finish line, we weren't quite done. They said, you know what, they're bringing out the Red Sox trophy at Fenway, but it's another almost 2 miles down the road. We went to Fenway, the finishers, and I got a great picture of me holding the Red Sox trophy with Fenway, the Green Monster in the background, and my marathon banging against the trophy. So that was really a capstone moment that I thought it was, you can't get any better than this.
The book is 409 to 902. How did 409 transition to the trifecta story, another book you've written?
After this book, folks were asking me about what's the rest of my marathon story? Because once I got finished with Oklahoma City, it really didn't end there. Part of that letting go process was 902. When the second planes hit the tower, during 9/11, that initial contact time was 9:02:59, that second plane. And I had stayed stuck in the 9:02 orbit until I finished the Oklahoma City Marathon. And the memorial there has two gates of time, 9:01 and 9:03. It took getting through 9:03 to let go. And once I did that, I figured everything was done. But the marathon story continued. Trifecta came about because someone asked me, what would you consider a successful marathoner? I said, well, if you can do 100 of these 26.2s and do one in all 50 states and have at least one Boston Marathon finish, that would be a trifecta of success. And so that's kind of how that evolved. I said, well, let me tell my running story. What an incredible journey, because I always had a camera with me, Edson. I envisioned it always being a traveler with running shoes, basically, and sightseeing.
Well, that book is still available, Trifecta, 26-plus years of 26.2s, Chronicles of a Marathoner. And another book that we'll touch on here in a second by David Hamill, our guest on the program, is My Cold World Life, 3 Decades of Silent Battle. Let's talk about this running and the COVID race shutdowns that led to basically, a new trajectory in your running story. How did that impact your running when we were virtually shut down for an extended period of time?
Yeah, that was quite a time for runners. Always shutting down. Wanted to go back to Boston that year. Boston was pushed to October, first time in its 104-year history. All these other races that come up were virtuals, basically. So I grabbed these theme runs. It was Memorial Day, Veterans Day. I was trying to get folks involved, follow me on a motorcycle, do anything to get out there. And so I continued running. I would grab every kind of themed run I could think of and get out there and run. Now, there was limitations, obviously, of how many people can do what, but the Sid Eiley was not going to happen. I said, that's not the American spirit. We're veterans. A lot of the guys I'm with, I says, nope, we'll finish at a cemetery. We'll finish at a monument. We'll do something. So I capture all that as part of that time because it was about not giving up, you know? So when things started opening back up again, I got back on that horse to continue running at least for a little while. And that led to my second Boston.
You know, that book, Trifecta, the book we're talking about, focus on primarily is 409 to 902, Boston to Oklahoma and New York City's Beyond the Bombings. The second book mentioned there was Trifecta, 26 plus years of 26.2, Chronicles of a Marathoner. And that trifecta transitioned to another book, My Cold War Life. Explain that transition.
Well, through all that, that was the rest of your military story. So both books, 409 and Trifecta, have my military stuff as a background to the events. But it was more to it. It was more the events that kind of came after Desert Storm, after 1991. But I came in 76, 77. Cold War was still going hot. So I said, well, let's talk about the Cold War. And people said, well, what's the Cold War? And I realized a lot of folks don't even know what the Cold War is. I said, well, let me kind of tell that story, what it was like growing up in the 60s and kind of 70s and what the world was like. And then I came in service at the time, was stationed in West Germany, worked nukes, got on the SR-71 U-2 spy plane program during the 80s under President Reagan. And then, of course, the end of the Cold War by 91 and the transitioning of coming off the nuclear alert status and retiring aircraft. So it's a neat time capsule of the times that led up to the end of the Cold War, but also as a precursor to the books that would follow.
So the trifecta are these three books. You can read all of these, get very important lessons, and all of the information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And My Cold War Life, let's talk about some of the past, the great aviation projects you were involved in, the SR-71, the U-2, the TR-1 Blackbirds. Talk about that. What was it like to work on those amazing projects, many of them top secret projects?
Yeah, at the time, satellites were coming into, getting better and better, but they weren't quite where they are today, obviously. And the SR-71 was retired by the 90s. But the missions at the time, to go into places that were tough to get into. I was supporting the maintenance as an ejection seat escape systems technician at the time. But I was able to go to places in Europe, South America, Asian, and being stationed in California, working out of Korea and Okinawa, and to put us in range of different places and support these missions. So what an incredible time as I look back. A lot of these are being declassified now, so what a nice time capsule, as a lot of these air crews and pilots have since written their books. And I'm thinking, well, great from a pilot's perspective, but what about a maintenance person that's supporting these missions and things? And so it's written as a maintenance perspective, as a mechanic on the ground helping them support all these great events.
What was that like with the mechanical aspect of these flights? As you say, we hear about the pilots, we see about the pilots. A lot of this was brand new technology, probably technology that was you were sort of improvising as you were going. What was it like, the mechanical work on this and these amazing aircraft?
You take a lot of maintenance to support. You put an airplane in the air, particularly like the SR-71, which is very complex, so all the pre-flight activities, preparing the airplane itself, never mind the cameras and things that go into it, quite a bit. As an ejection seat guy, basically to gain access to the cockpits, I would have to remove the canopy, the seat, the rockets, the parachutes, so the other specialists could get in there and modify or put their equipment in. And then we would leave. They would come in. Everybody had their place. But once the plane took off, we knew it was going to do something directed by higher command for sure.
Just an amazing time in history, and the technology, just breakthrough technology in so many aspects of aviation, and David was there for that. In reading your books, you were there for some very important periods of history. How do you see yourself fitting into American history? You were there for a lot of this, exciting times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Cold War in general, growing up, and of course being stationed in West Germany, it was East and West, and things were hot in the 70s at that time. We had a lot going on in the Caribbean with Soviets supporting arms operations in South America. So monitoring all those kind of activities were key to keeping America safe, as well as out of Asia. So as well as the U-2s in Korea, worked those too. But being a part of all that, you don't, when you're doing it, you don't really realize it. But in hindsight, what an incredible time in our history. And our freedoms directly come from that time to where we are today. Securing our borders, securing the waters and airspaces during that time led to our successes today.
And you were there for such an important part of that, all of those transitions that are brought out in David's books. Are there continued transition stories to come after these three? Do you have any more stories to tell?
Well, ironically, yes. One thing always leads to the other. I retired out of Pope Air Force Base here in North Carolina. There's a monument that sits in one of our little air parks with a broken propeller. And it bugged me fierce, why is that propeller broken on this monument? Well, it's dedicated to Lieutenant Harley Pope, who crashed his plane in the river over here, Cape Fear River, in 1919, and became Pope Air Force Base years later. But there was more to the story, and as I started researching it, no one knew where the crash site was. It was hard to find history, and so I went on this chase. And lo and behold, there was a guy in the back seat that no one knew about, a sergeant. Well, sergeants didn't really fly back then, not officially. And that brought me back to Maxwell, Alabama, Air Force Base there. I was director of heritage and history, but I did all the World War II staff sergeant pilot history at the time. So I realized we were collecting new history, finding Hope, Lieutenant Pope and his backseater, Fleming. And so that began the next journey, telling about my story as director from 2000 to 2004. And all the events then, but the book is going to be titled Propel, Inspiring Airmen, 2000 to 2004 and Beyond. And what a great journey that is of a lot of Medal of Honor events in Air Force enlisted heritage and history.
Well, I hope we have a chance to talk about that as well. You do such a remarkable job of bringing your stories to life. We feel like we're there. We are part of history in so many of these events, not only just watching history, but going through the emotional journey that you were on, in particular 409 to 902, Boston to Oklahoma and New York City's beyond the bombings. Our guest is the author, David Hamill. A couple minutes left in the program. Out of 409 to 902, what are some of the lessons that you talk about in the book that you hope will be a takeaway for those of us who read the book?
With 409 to 902, it's really a story about letting go. Events happen in our lives that will always create a jolt and a redirect. You're going to be forced to go in another direction by events that you can't control and how you react to them. Sometimes it'll take an event to reignite some feelings, as in this case. But I was able to put that to rest by going and doing these things, working through them, running these marathons in the case of Boston and Oklahoma City. And I'm in a better place today because of that letting go. And the new trajectory is to write about it. So one thing leads to the other, and don't be afraid to roll with it, I think. It's always going to lead to your next exciting time, and I'm still, chasing it, but it's okay. Everything is going to be okay.
Well, David takes these terrible experiences that lead to positive outcomes, and he takes us along in that journey. We all go through the bumps and the setbacks, and we figure, how do we get out of these? Well, David was able to do that, and he shares those experiences in his book, 409 to 902. Also has some nuggets and life lessons from the Bible there as well. How important was faith in getting you through all of this?
I grew up in a religious family in Massachusetts, basically Catholic. But the church, the Bible, the different things that could be on your spiritual side. There's always a verse or two that you can relate to through Bible readings or one-liners that can just keep you on the straight, like a moral compass. It's something that kind of guides you along the way. And you may stray from it, over lifetime things, but every now and then you'll come back and you just see things differently. The one that covers, I think it was in 409, as Jesus wept, there's a statue with that saying there, and that really set the tone for Oklahoma City Memorial. If you happen to see that memorial and that statue, but as Jesus wept, really set the tone, and that picture is in 409.
Well, and you use pictures, images that make the story come alive, the very important points that you're talking about in your various books, not just 409, but through all of them. The book is 409 to 902, Boston to Oklahoma and New York Cities, Beyond the Bombings. David Hamill, our guest on the program, that's H-A-M-E-L, if you're going to Google, book available. Wherever books are sold, send you to pageturner.us in their bookstore. Information there, and of course, a link on a website, thisweekinamerica.us. David, a pleasure having you on the program. Hopefully we can do it again for the new book. That sounds fascinating. Looking forward to having a chance to discuss that as well. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Oh, thank you, Rick. Much enjoyed. Be well.
You as well. And again, the book, 409 to 902, Boston to Oklahoma and New York Cities Beyond the Bombings. A link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And that's what you're listening to This Week in America. And we're back right after these messages.